meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We got a big show ahead of us tonight. We're going to be all over the map. I wanted to start out with the news that I'm hearing, reading about, seeing that Drew Peterson is about to be arrested and indicted. And I thought I would bring on his lawyer and Drew himself to comment on that. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Dan. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Drew. Joel Brodsky, I know we did the show just a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about some of the predictions the media is making, but they don't seem to be going away. Your comments?
Yeah, they really don't. This media, this round, I think, is fueled by a statement that came from the state's attorney. He'll be up for election in a few days, and he issued a press release that talked about the matter coming, he expects something to be resolved in the near future, and that kind of started the speculation all over again, unfortunately.
When you hear that term, something to be resolved in the near future, what can you comment on, Joel? Have you been told anything?
There's nothing. I said when it came, when I first heard this or was told about this press release, I thought at that point that it really had more to do with the election.
Okay.
He says a contested election coming up here in a few days, and I thought it had more to do with the election, and I still do, than it has to do with any significant change in the case or the facts of the case. I mean, Jim Glasgow is a fine state's attorney. I mean, he really is a very good state's attorney. The people of Will County are lucky to have him as a state's attorney. He does a great job. But on the other hand, he is a politician, and politicians do have to get elected and reelected, and sometimes they say things that more for the intent of getting elected than anything else, and I think that's what we're dealing with here.
Drew, I've asked you this question before, but obviously you have a contingency plan when and if something like that does happen, but you can't help but hear these things, and your kids, especially your older ones, hear these things. How do you deal with that?
Everybody ready for something, It's just like you prepare for the worst, and if the best happens, you're delightfully surprised. That's about all I can do. You hear things, and you've heard so much things, and you just deal with it each time. So that contingencies are in place for the well-being of the children. That's my main concern.
One of the comments, or actually I get several comments when I have you on, Drew, sent to me, and one of them was, how dare you bring Drew Peterson on when he said on the anniversary of the disappearance of Stacey Peterson, well, it's just another day. Now, I don't know if you said that or not. I didn't hear you say that, but I'm going to ask your comments on that question.
Well, it's just my kids, miss their mother every day. So it's just like to celebrate it or to let's call it memorialize it or whatever you say is, I think, a little out of line. If everybody else wants to do that, it's something that my family and my kids are just not going to get involved in because, we miss her being around every day. So it's like, just us again, it's just another day. Stay missing her.
Joel Brodsky, we've talked about Geraldo Rivera and other people in the news. In fact, I again invited Geraldo to come on tonight and got no response. However, he is quite quick to vilify you and your client in the media. But when it comes to confronting the two of you on a forum that somebody else is moderating, he doesn't want anything to do with that. The media maybe has slowed down a little bit. But I'm curious your comments on how it's been going lately.
Well, I'm afraid it's going. The 1 year anniversary, for lack of a better word, caused a lot of media attention, and then we're going to have the trial on the weapons charge coming up in December, and starting December 5th, and that's going to bring a lot of media attention to Drew's situation. It's probably going to be covered on a daily basis by everybody. But I think after we're past that, hopefully things will calm down and go back to some semblance of normality for Drew, because there really is nothing that's going to happen that's going to change things. It's there was no evidence of any wrongdoing 11 months ago, no evidence of any wrongdoing 6 months ago, and there's not going to be any evidence of any wrongdoing by Drew in a year. So I'm hoping that after the weapons case is over that things will start simmering down and Drew can get back to a semblance of some sort of normal life. I know it won't be 100% normal because, Stacy's not with her family. She's one off somewhere, but at least as normal as it can ever be.
Drew, I'm going to ask you this question. Police officer over 30 years, we usually put people before the courts. We usually don't go before the courts. Of course, there's a stigma about bad cops, and this cop did this bad, and that cop did that bad. You're going to be going to trial on a weapons charge. You're going to be vilified again and again and again in the media. I'd like you to comment on that from the perspective of being a former police officer.
Well, it's kind of a hard thing to deal with. I've led my life pretty honorable, and I've done honorable things. I think in 30 years I was disciplined once. That was for the actions of my subordinates, not for something that I'd done. So it's just kind of hard to swallow, being often portrayed a bad guy when, I loved my life as honorably as I could. So that's about all I can say. Everything I did in my police career was, honorable things. I've guarded presidents and dignitaries and heads of states, and had an exemplary record, arrest record as a police officer, and to be now looked upon as a bad guy, it's kind of a scary thing, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, it's more heartbreaking than anything.
Joel, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was. I think Drew has, and I hope he picks up on this. Drew has told me that he's particularly upset about this weapons charge because the weapon in question he had, strictly for, use in his apartment. It wasn't a, personal weapon. He bought it at his own expense to use on duty. And now they're trying to turn that against him. I know that Drew's expressed to me on several occasions how he's felt about that.
He had something that they want to charge me for having. And it was particularly possessed and used and carried and designed strictly to protect the people of Bolingbrook, people of the state of Illinois. And now to be charged with something that I did something wrong, it's kind of like really, I think, an injustice. And it's kind of a slap in the face pretty much for every police officer out there to know that something like this would happen.
Joel Brodsky, would you consider this charge a fishing expedition?
Yeah, it is. We've asserted, one of the defenses we've asserted is that it's called vindictive prosecution. What we're saying is that the state police caused this charge to be brought because Drew went into court and got his weapons back, the guns that were his property, that were taken in the search warrant after the police had an opportunity to process it as evidence and, record it, do all the ballistics tests and everything, that he went and got it back, and they didn't want to give it back. At first, then they went and they pulled his firearms owner's license, and then after that, after he got an order for the guns to go back to his kids, his son, Stephen, another police officer, he was charged. And I really think that this charge is simply brought by the state police to punish him for exercising his rights to get his property back, his weapons. And I think we'll be able to show that to the jury. And if we do, the jury will have to come back. They'll be instructed to come back with a finding of not guilty.
Drew Peterson and Joel Brodsky are here. Drew, last time we had you on the program, we were talking to the author of the book that convinced you, I guess that's not the right term, you agreed to take a polygraph. Some questions came back truthful, some did not, and we won't get into that part of it. I know Joel's upset with you for taking that polygraph, but how big was that to you to take that polygraph? Did you think that was a shot for this to all go away?
Well, basically, I've been convicted by the press, and everybody's going to start yelling, take a polygraph, take a polygraph. Well, I said take a polygraph. And the questions that came back that they were deceptive were pretty benign questions, and the questions that came back non-deceptive. They were, you know, did I hurt anybody? Did I do anything to anybody? And I said no, and all those questions came back truthful. So basically it was a response to basically, okay, shut up. I took your polygraph. I basically passed all the serious questions.
Joel Brodsky, last question for you. What do you see next? I know the media won't lay off, and when the time does come, if it does come, you're going to be bombarded big time. But where do you see this going?
I really and truly believe that, like I said, Jim Glasgow and this assistant state attorney in charge of the investigations, a guy by the name of John Connor, they're both really good lawyers, and they're... You know, they know as state attorneys their job is not simply only to prosecute, but to only prosecute where there's evidence of wrongdoing, not just to throw a guy up in front of a jury because he's unpopular and maybe getting a conviction. They both know what their duty is, and they're both fine lawyers. And I don't see that there will ever be a charge brought against Drew for either relating to Stacy or Kathleen, and that's because there is no evidence that can be brought into a court of law, or no evidence, no physical, no evidence in any way, shape, or form, you know, other than speculation and kind of like I wouldn't even call it circumstantial evidence, just kind of rumor and gossip of any wrongdoing by Drew. And that, given being the case, I think that this is going to just eventually peter out, and I guess they call it a cold case, but I don't know if that's the right term, but it's eventually going to peter out, and Drew will be able to, at some point in the future, you know, kind of get back into a normal existence and live his life with his kids and raise the two little ones as good, doing a good job as he's done with the other four.
Drew Peterson, Joel Brodsky, thank you.
You're welcome, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Yeah, bye-bye. A peaceful existence for Drew Peterson, yes, but we need to have a peaceful existence for the family of Stacy Peterson and Kathleen Savio. There are more answers to be got. Is that proper English? I'm not sure. Speaking of proper English, one of my favorite authors, Fred Rosen, and I had a chat this afternoon about his new book, Deadly Angel, and I thought it particularly important to bring this interview to you today, because there's a wild political connection to the story. Here's Fred Rosen. You all know my next guest, author Fred Rosen, author of books like When Satan Wore a Cross, There But for the Grace of God. Of course, he is a true crime writer. He has a new book coming out called Deadly Angel, and it's something that I thought I'd bring him on the show to talk about tonight. Hi, Fred.
Hey, Dana, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome back to the show. Now, true crime writers like yourself grab stories, go with them, run with them. But this story, Deadly Angel, is something that is a lot bigger than just the story, is it not?
Yes, it is. What happened was, it was just totally unexpected. It started out as just a cold case about a stripper who moved from New Jersey to Alaska in the mid-90s, and then had a number of fiancés, and fiancé number one wound up killing fiancé number two.
Okay.
And this led to an investigation, and a murder investigation. And it was in Alaska, and I was not really paying much attention, except, you know, it was Alaska. You know, there was nothing unusual, except for that, maybe.
Sure, yep.
And then all of a sudden, Dana, one day after the Democratic convention, John McCain announced that Sarah Palin was his candidate for Vice President of the United States and made history by the Republican Party choosing a female in the second role, first time. And I suddenly had this moment of gestalt where I realized she was the mayor of Wasilla, which is the town where the murder, where the decedent came from in the book. And I went, oh, my God.
Okay.
And the reason I went, oh, my God, is because it's a town of 4,000 people. Everybody knows everybody.
Right.
So, I'm sitting here, Dana, and I'm on deadline, and I'm going, oh, man, I don't need this. I got to investigate a candidate for vice president of the United States for for a true crime book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sitting there and I'm saying, okay, but I got to do it, right? What else am I? I mean, she's on, you know, even if she's on the periphery of the case, I got to do it.
Absolutely.
There.
Yep.
So, you know, ask me some questions.
Well, again, you, all of a sudden, like you say, you have a candidate for vice president, a town of 4,000, she's the mayor, but there's even a bigger story than that. We're not talking about just Sarah Palin and how Tina Fey imitates her on Saturday Night Live, and the whole bit about this is there is some... there's some hanky-panky going on here, right from the mayor's office down to the cops to the big story, right. Is there not?
Yes, and let me explain what happened. I was able to get into it, and what happened was this. I'd rather do it from the point of view of it being 1986.
Sure.
Rather than, okay, this is what happened then, okay? And what I did was, I went back and I interviewed the chief of police, Earl Stambell, he was Wasilla's chief of police, and I interviewed one of the other investigators on this particular case, and I also spoke with, I was going to say the Alaska Highway Patrol, I'm dating myself, the Alaska State Police.
Sure.
Okay, and what makes this whole thing interesting is Alaska doesn't have counties, okay? It's not like most places in the U.S. where we got, you know, a county has jurisdiction.
Right.
The state has got jurisdiction all over the place except for Anchorage in terms of murders.
Okay.
If a murder happens here, the state police come in. Murder happens here, state police come in. Makes no difference. So, this dude gets murdered two, three towns over from Wasilla, right? Mm-hmm. Gets murdered in a town called Hope. And the cops come in, the state police, they investigate it. They track him back to his town, which is about 120 miles away, which, of course, in Alaska is a hop, skip, and a jump. And now... they start investigating, and the state police come in, and what I discovered, number one, is that it isn't uncommon for the state police not to let the locals know they're around.
Sure, yep.
That's number one. Number two, I asked, when I spoke to the chief of police, I said, okay, I wanted to know what Sarah Palin knew, because she became the mayor during this period of time, during this investigation. And he said, well, he said, I can't recall a direct conversation we had about it, but she couldn't help but know about it because we all look at the same media.
Sure.
He was being very, very careful in what he was saying. And again, I want to point out it's a town of 4,000. She was elected in 1996 by a 661 vote majority. Okay?
I gotcha.
So until the time that she ran for governor, she probably never polled more than 1,000 votes. Well, what happened here was this, Dana. Unlike in other venues where a mayor of a small town will go to bat for one of their own who's killed, and they will offer a reward, or they might say to their police chief, please cooperate with the state, help, you know, that reach out in that way. Instead, she fired the chief of police because she didn't like him or something like that. And then at the same time that happened, as has been reported in the press, she fired the local librarian. Now again, this is in the middle of a murder investigation. And to me, this is the most important aspect here. I think nothing takes precedence over that personally.
Sure, yep.
And that's why I wanted to talk to you, Dana, because as a police officer, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Sure, politics get in the way sometimes. There's no question about it. But this was a cut and dry situation. The guy's dead. He was shot 3 times. Okay? Why is it that the mayor, my question was, why didn't the mayor, Mayor Palin, get involved and try to help the state police? Instead, she was doing all this other stuff. So I got on the phone and I called Alaska and I got her PR people on the line and I asked them, I'd like to talk to you about when she was the mayor. And they said, we can't answer your questions. And I said, you can't answer? No, we don't know anything about her until she was governor. This is her office, her PR office in Alaska. And I said, okay, who do I call? They said, you have to call the national campaign. I said, okay, give me the number. Well, we had a number, but it's been disconnected, and then they hung up on me.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. Now, I haven't talked about this in nationally, and for, there's actually another author who's working on a book about the same case, and that's the reason I haven't talked about it, because I don't want to give my competitors something.
No.
However, I do believe that when information is relevant to something like the greater good, which is a presidential election, without coming out on one side or the other, I think it's good that people know these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what kind of person are you voting for? And I might add, this is the first time she has problems with pleas under her aegis, and this foreshadows what will occur later during whatever they call it up in Alaska, Trooper Gate or whatever the hell they call it. You know, where she got the state police to go after her former brother-in-law, who was a state policeman,
mm-hmm.
who divorced her sister.
So when you look at this story, all of a sudden the big picture is making you pull out what little hair you have left on your head. I think
I needed that, Dana. Thank you, Dana. I love you, babe.
Yeah, I know.
I love you, babe. What's the weather in Saskatchewan today?
It's better than Alaska. Now, listen, in all seriousness, you know I'm just kidding because I have less hair than you do. But anyway, you want to check into this, which is right, and they all of a sudden don't have a number for the national campaign and all this crazy kind of stuff. But again, there's the big picture. There's somebody that was murdered. There was a police chief that was fired.
Right.
My next question to you, both as a law enforcement officer and as a talk show host, investigator,
right,
whatever.
But you're in that unique situation that you get it.
Yep.
You know, you get it. We're not talking about a situation where somebody just, you know, falls off a subway platform or some crap like that. We're talking the dude is found out in the middle of nowhere, okay, purely by chance by a lineman for the, you know, one of the local utility companies. He's been plugged in the stomach, in the back, and in the cheek, okay? I love that saying, plugged. I sound like Jimmy Tacky, don't I? And
you dirty rat, yeah.
And it's a particularly brutal murder.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, and how brutal does it have to get for, you know, a mayor? My question was to get him to do something. I mean, isn't, you know, 4,000 people? I live in Woodstock, New York. We got over 7,000 people here, and believe me, the mayor knows everybody.
Yep. Everybody knows everybody. I'm curious. My next question is, what did the chief say? Why was he fired, or in his opinion?
Well,
you knew I'd ask that.
Yeah, I knew you'd ask that, and I gave him. And I'll be totally frank and say I gave opportunity to trash her if that's what he wanted to do.
He wouldn't do it.
No, not only that, but I spoke to there was an investigator that worked for the police chief at the time who's still in that police department in Wasilla. And I spoke with him as well. And the thing is, they all know Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
And as the chief said that as far as his firing was concerned, he pretty much said it was, you know, a political thing or whatever, and he really did not want to go into any detail about it. He sounded like he was nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And when I spoke to the investigator who'd been on the case, and, you know, who'd worked on it briefly and is now, I think, a sergeant, he said something to me that you'll appreciate. He said, you know what, Fred? Whatever happens, we're still going to be here afterwards.
That's right. The case itself and Sarah Palin, whether you look at Trooper Gate or whether you look at this case, I think it's fascinating to look at a town of 4,000 people and the conflict between a chief and a mayor. And you are so right when it comes down to even just PR. The murders don't happen a dime a dozen up there. Why wasn't?
No, they don't. It's not. It's unlike what people might think. this isn't a place that gets a huge amount of murders, because there's only 625,000 people in the whole friggin' state. You know? I mean, you know, Americans, us dudes in the lower 48, we don't get that, you know? We really don't understand it, and until you start taking a look at the map and the whole thing, and you go, wait a second, they're all along over here on the coast, you know? And you try to get a Google picture of the interior? Lots of luck. Lots of luck. I don't even know if the satellites have gone in there yet.
No, I don't think so. I think they're still using telegraph. But
hey, you know what? Hey, you know what? I just passed Samuel Morse's home today.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did. It's on the other side of the Hudson River. Get this. Sam Morse, Alfred Vanderbilt, and FDR all had their mansions in a row. They must all hung out and drunk stuff together.
I bet they did.
You got to figure that, right?
You got to figure that is right. Now,
and down the block, by the way, was where Bob Guccione had his mansion, but now Uma Thurman owns it.
Oh my God! What a comparison!
Hey, I got to give you this stuff.
I know, but Deadly Angel is not going to be out for a little bit, or when's it coming out?
Oh, it's not coming out until next March, and but I just felt that it was just it's just important to talk about this, because it's not something that you're going to read about.
No,
they're not going to pick up on this. It's a much more you know, even the Obama campaign, if they were to try to get something on her, blah, 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 the most you could say here, Dana, is that the mayor of a small town objectively did nothing to help solve the murder of one of her own. Now, that it's up to the individual to decide whether that's good, bad, or whether it means anything. But what makes it relevant is this is an individual who's up for a very high role here.
It's big time relevant, and I'm sure that when the book comes out, we'll have more answers. But I got to ask you from the perspective of a voter come Tuesday. John McCain was on Saturday Night Live last night with Tina Fey pretending to be Sarah Palin. It was one of the funniest bits I saw in a long time. They couldn't afford time on the big networks, so the McCain campaign bought time on QVC to go on and sell knives and juicers and things like that. It was hilarious, and John McCain was actually funny. He wasn't a stuffed shirt. But it's too little, too late right now. But the United States of America will pick a president on Tuesday, and will Barack Obama be that guy? I think so. What do you think?
Wow. On Tuesday, here's what I believe. I believe that I'm not sure by what margin. I believe that Barack Obama will be the next president of the United States. What I find really interesting is I actually took a look at it today. This just goes to show you that what a boring life I lead. And I looked at the electoral map from 1860 when Lincoln was elected. And who, by the way, was not the last candidate from Illinois. And I'm sick and tired of people saying that. Grant came from Illinois.
Right.
So Obama gets elected. He's the third dude, not the second.
Okay.
All right. But I looked at this, and you know what got me? The states that Obama, that's like the states that are comfortably in his column, match exactly the states that were comfortably in Lincoln's column.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's like you're looking at this and you're going, Jesus. And I might include the West Coast states as well. Now, of course, you don't have the middle of the country because it was all territory. But here's the really interesting part about this. Okay? As soon as Lincoln gets elected, right, the South, you know, makes up their mind by the, you know, they're going to secede. By the time he gets in office, like seven states have already seceded from the Union, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing something different on this electoral map. If Obama is elected, but it turns out to be a mandate, if you suddenly start seeing him getting Virginia, North Carolina, even Missouri, where he's tied, we're going into a future that no one can predict. In other words, we might actually have something that no one could ever have conceived of, which is a black president with a mandate. I mean, that's like unbelievable.
It should be interesting. It should be interesting, and it's something that even up here in Canada, and almost my audience is from the United States, we're fascinated when we take a look at the electoral process, and it's never over till the fat lady sings, but I think she's up to the microphone.
Yes, and the other thing is that my daughter just slipped me a note that says, "What radio station are you on?" Scared Monkeys on the net, but we're taping, okay?
It'll be on tonight.
It'll be on tonight at 10 o'clock?
At 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock, okay.
I'll email you the link, Fred.
Yeah, he'll cut it out, okay. No, you can't say hi. All right, let me just continue.
Okay.
Okay, the electoral deal, the electoral college, which is so damn confusing even to Americans. I don't know why they didn't eliminate it after 2000. You would have thought, you know. But what we'll look, you see, that's the whole deal. It's like when you look at that, right now, I mean, if anybody listening wants to go to CNN.com, look at their electoral map. I have no interest in CNN. I don't have their stock. I don't like Ted Turner. I don't care, but I'll tell you right now, you're going to go there and you're going to see that they've got them ahead by 290 electoral votes with 270 needed to win.
Yep. Yeah.
What's today, Sunday?
Yep.
You know, so I think we're looking at a profound, if the stats hold up, Dana, not only are we looking at a profound change for American society, but I think societies around the world, not the least of which is Canada, because one thing I've learned in the last couple of years, we're all in this together.
Yep.
Whichever way the United States goes a lot of other places. And whoever you want for president, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you cast your vote on Tuesday, please.
That's the most important thing. Fred Rosen, the book will be Deadly Angel, and of course you can go to fredrosen.com. Thank you, sir.
Dana, it's been my pleasure as usual. Take care of yourself.
Okay, bud. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, we all know how Fred is going to vote on Tuesday, but I think the important thing is that you get out and vote. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. My next guest is one of my favorites. What I always tell her, and I'm not sure what she thinks about this, is that Jackie Hollander not only is my friend, but she's also a victim. And what impresses me the most about Jackie Hollander is how she has taken her victimization, set it aside. She's normal. She's human. She has issues when it comes to being a rape victim, but she spends the majority of her time helping others. You can go to her website at www.jackiehollander, and I'm going to spell that for you because Jackie spelled a little bit differently. So it's www.jackie, which is J-A-C-Q-U-E. Hollander is H-O-L-L-A-N-D-E-R.com. So that's www.jackiehollander.com. I want you to check out her webpage. And I thought I would bring Jackie on tonight to talk about her case, her victimization, and what's going on, because as you know, I'm not even going to use the term, the former late singer James Brown raped Jackie a long time ago, and the courts, the system, didn't help. And this is far from being over, this case. There's a lot more to talk about, and it's always a pleasure to have Jackie on the program. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, you might get a little angry with me, but you're the one person I know the most, and I've talked to a lot of victims, and most victims do this, whether they're victims themselves or whether their families are victims. They work so hard, and I find this so impressive, to help others. Yet I really worry about how they're helping themselves, and I know you're doing both, but you are such a strong advocate for others. How you been?
You know, I'm a little hoarse tonight, so please bear with me.
That's okay.
I've been through a lot the past, you know, I think you know, the past couple of weeks.
Yep.
And a little knock there on the head, but I'm holding up pretty good. I'm a little sore. and throat's a little gone. But I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be alive. And before I get into the $155 million trust that I created in 1987, I'd like to talk about, I've got some friends down in Texas.
Right.
With the Kelly Miller Circus. And I'm an advocate for victims, but I'm also an advocate for animals, too. Kelly Miller means a lot to me. I spent a lot of time with them the past several months, and I got a chance to meet everybody from John Ringling North to John Moss, the ringmaster, to just each and every entertainer, Tony the Clown and Freeman, the Aerialist, and they're a bunch of great people. They've really taken some hard knocks from PETA, who has, I guess, gone across the United States calling them animal abusers.
Mm.
I can assure you that I spent time with their elephants. I spent time between shows when nobody else was there. And these people are top-notch people who truly, truly love their animals. And these animals are not abused, Dana. They are treated so kindly. They're bathed in bubble bath and given popcorn. And they're just, their animals are their family. And for these protesters that are out there prancing around and calling them animal killers and animal abusers, PETA, you can just kiss my tail tonight.
Good for you.
You come after me. I've gotten your emails, and you're not bothering me, and I'm going to stand very strong. So to all of my buddies down there in Texas, my heart is with you, and I'm thinking of you at Kelly Miller. I love you, and I can't wait to see you again.
Absolutely, and the show must go on. And, you know, Jackie, you know I've done many shows with the Humane Society of the United States of America, and not once have any of my contacts there ever mentioned the organization you're talking about and anything that has to do with animal cruelty. Hey, I'm the first one that'll go out and get after someone who's abusing animals, but an organization like that is not. And the kooks at PETA, they'll dress up in cow suits and harass young children who are drinking milk in school. That's just it. They're kooks and nothing more.
Well, you know, it's really strange because I actually went up against some of their protesters when I was there at the circus. And, you know, as a rape victim, it takes a lot to make a rape victim smile. I want you to know that this circus opened their arms to me. They embraced me. They did not know who Jackie Hollander was when I walked in there. They made me a part of their family. And their clown, Tony, just made me smile 24 hours, night and day, the whole time I was there. And I can't ask for more. And they do so much for charities across the United States. And the Internet has just been filled with all kind of lies about them. And I really wanted to get that straight tonight.
Well, that's my pleasure to help with that. Now, I want to get into the trust. We've talked about this before.
$155 million trust.
What's going on with that, Jackie?
You know, we're down there in South Carolina, and I got a beautiful text this morning from Buddy Dallas, James Brown's lawyer. I think you know I've been up against Buddy Dallas for 20 years.
Sure.
To receive a text from him and to receive the support and the affidavits he has given to me, I created the trust in 1987. It's the same trust that's in court right now that everybody is suing. And I want them to know, and I think it's important. I created it. That's my trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise you, before this is all over, to all you people going after this trust, that money is going to be given away to the poor, to the needy in our United States, in the state of South Carolina. And all you people that claim you deserve something, you don't. And I'm tough, Dana. I will fight for what is right, and I will see to it that this money does go out to everybody. I was actually given a phone call, and I'm probably going to let some stuff out tonight that's going to be a firecracker, and I know that, but I've learned a lot the past couple of weeks, and I'm tired of holding stuff back.
Sure.
I was told by one of James Brown's high ups And he came, you know, and he said to me, and Buddy Dallas orchestrated the conversation. And my hat to you, Buddy Dallas, thank you so much. That when they questioned James Brown through the course of the 20 years of the I guess you would say, court case with me, that James Brown did not deny to them that he raped me. That was a real shocker, because his own people now are saying he never denied it.
Now,
you're hearing this for the first time.
Let's go back just a little bit for my audience members that aren't familiar with the case, Jackie. Let's encapsulate that a little bit. Give the Reader's Digest version. I know that's tough to do, but James Brown raped you a long time ago. You took this case right to the Supreme Court, and James Brown died. Is that correct?
He died on Christmas Day when I had him in the United States Supreme Court in Washington. And, you know, I know now that his lawyers had a job to do, and that was to protect him. But to hear after he's dead, you know, their job is over now, that they could say to me, you know, he didn't deny it. That was the greatest gift anybody could have given me, you know, for them to look at me and say, you know, we respect you, to receive the support that I've received from them. And I will support Buddy Dallas, the man that I did go up against for 20 years. And he's right now being accused of having coerced James Brown to put his money and all of his assets into this trust. Well, I can assure you that I was there. I created the trust. James Brown, you couldn't coerce to do anything. A person that I suffered many hours out in the woods with, a crazy maniac. This man had a gun to my head and to my face. And I can just tell you that there was no coercing James Brown to put the money into it. Personally, I think that James Brown maybe couldn't have admitted to the world that he raped me. But in the end, by doing what he did, I think he was making peace with himself. So I'm going to stand strong, and I'm going to stand with Buddy Dallas, and I'm going to support him. And we're going to stand up, and we're going to stand for the truth. And that's that this trust helps the poor and the needy across the United States. And I received a... I'm sorry, my throat. I'm really having a hard time.
That's okay, Jackie.
I received a email today from my former spokesperson, Mr. Larry Garrison. You know, my friends mean a lot to me, Dana. I don't care if you drive an old beat-up Volkswagen or you drive a limousine. You know, I really don't care. My friends are my friends. They're very important to me. I'm as proud of the Kelly Miller Circus as I am of my friends in the United States Senate. And, I mean, I even know someone right now running for president.
Right.
That's John McCain. So my friends are my friends. And my former spokesperson left me an email today and said that I had stooped to my lowest of lows breaking this out tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show. And I want to say to you, Larry Garrison, I think tonight that you have stepped to the lowest you could have ever stepped. It was one thing for you to represent Casey Ann Anthony, knowing that there is a 3-year-old baby somewhere buried out in the ground out there. And you're sitting there making movie deals and book deals for them. And I'm just, my heart really broke this afternoon when I got that email. And I'm so disappointed in Larry, and I'm appalled that he would even send me a email like that. And I'm very proud to break what I've got to say on this show, and I'm very proud to be a part of Scared Monkeys.
Well, we're glad to have you, and it's unfortunate that Mr. Garrison has to make comments like that. I haven't spoken to him in several months now, and I don't know what to say, why he would send that to you, but let's set him aside right now. I consider him a non-issue. You have some important things to say, and the floor is yours.
Well, basically, I think, you know, I've pretty much kept my life. I've tried to live a life pretty, you know, under the radar. I've not been a person that, you know, I haven't been out on a lot of TV shows talking and stuff because I kind of feel like that I've tried to keep a normal life. And it's been hard. It's been very difficult to have that life. And so this case, this trust, a lot of the memories, they're very difficult. It's all coming back up. They sold my bracelet and headband up at Christie's auction house.
Right.
It was found in James Brown's house. They sold it even though they had received affidavits. I talked to the Attorney General's office this week. They're questioning now the court-appointed trustees. That's a judge appointed to do the auction up there at Christie's, Adele Pope and Bob Buchanan. They knew the stuff was mine. They forged ahead. They sold this stuff up there. So people out there in the United States or in the world, whoever bought my headband, whoever bought my bracelet, that was not James Brown's that you bought, that you spent the thousands and thousands of dollars for. You bought evidence from a rape. So if you can wear the headband and you can wear the bracelet from the night of my rape, I hope you can live with yourself.
Jeez.
Think that it's really disgusting that I had to sit back and watch my stuff be auctioned at Christie's after 20 years of it being hidden in James Brown's. Buddy Dallas gave an affidavit. That wasn't enough to stop Adele Pope. I got a phone call this week from the Attorney General's office that they're checking into it in South Carolina. Do you know what they were told by Adele Pope?
What were they told, Jackie?
They were told to go to the judge that I was, that all of anything on me is, what do you want to call it, locked under key?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's all kept secret.
It's sealed. Yeah.
Sealed. Well, you know what? I'm not sealed, Miss Pope. I've got a mouth, and I'm going to talk. And you know what, Miss Pope? Anything on me is not sealed. So when you tell the Attorney General's office of the state of South Carolina they've got to go to a judge, there's a problem here, Dana. When you are a lawyer and you're in a court case and you're telling the Attorney General's office to go to the judge to get information on me?
Yeah.
What is she hiding? What is she hiding on me that I don't know, that even the Attorney General's office can't get on my stuff? That's pretty bad. The case down there, Dana, is a nightmare. Hundreds and hundreds of lawyers. Hundreds and hundreds of lawyers representing lawyers. It's just an absolute nightmare down there. And, you know, I choose to just sit back. I choose to sit with the truth. I've got the tapes. I've got the documentation. I mean, when I walk in, it'll be over. It'll be over.
This is such a big story, Jackie, and we're down to about 8 minutes left in our segment, and we'll have you back on again. There must be some concern on your behalf, not only for, like you say, the truth, and how do they say it in the movies, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, but there's still some pretty big figures involved in this.
My life? Are we going to talk about my life now, my safety?
I was just about to say, are you safe?
You know, Dana, I'm going to be honest. In the past couple of weeks, I think it's gotten out that I've gotten some threats from out of New York. I got a letter postmarked to me, and how they found me, I don't know. It's not like I hide from people, but you know, the letter was pretty telling me basically in some words, you know, what it was. I understand that $155 million is a lot of money, and I think a lot of people probably hope that I don't make it. I'm pretty tough. I went 20 years up against James Brown.
You sure did.
Up against all his harassment. And the truth is the truth. I had a lady walk up to me the other day, and she said, you know, you worry me because look at Anna Nicole. But there's a difference here, Larry. I mean, Dana, I'm not Anna Nicole. I'm not a drug user, and I believe very strongly in the truth. And I'm in God's hands. That's all I can say. I've been very blessed. There's a book offer right now that I'm working with a wonderful person that you happen to know.
Yes.
And there's talks of possible, you know, documentaries and movies and all that. And so I'm forging right ahead. I'm going to do it. I'm going to release the truth. You know, a lot of people don't realize that Reverend Al Sharpton probably doesn't want me talking, because he actually was with Mr. Brown the day that I got raped. That's never been released.
Al Sharpton, the person that we hear about all the time?
Yeah,
Rainbow,
Al Sharpton.
Rainbow Coalition, I believe, is what he calls his organization. He was there when James Brown raped you.
He wasn't there during the rape. He was there prior. Sean Flynn from GQ Magazine, when he interviewed me for the story that came out in it was out in March of this year. I don't know if you saw it. You probably did.
I did.
You did see it?
Yes.
Is there anybody that didn't see it? And when he interviewed me, I told him, he went up to New York and he interviewed Mr. Sharpton, and he asked him if he was there on that day, and Sharpton did not deny it. So, I mean, you know, I'm sitting here, I've been sitting on a lot of stuff, and I'm kind of just to the point where, you know what? Hey, let it out. I'm tired of just kind of having to walk around on eggshells and stuff. And you know, here's Reverend Al Sharpton, who's out there supposedly going to every single rally that there is, and on the Tawana Brawley case and blah, blah, this and blah, blah, that, supporting all these people. And here he is. Adrienne Brown was a battered and beat woman, and I was raped. And, I mean, you didn't, when I took James Brown to court, you didn't hear a peep out of his mouth. Why wasn't he standing up against me?
There's a huge story to be told. We've got about a minute left, Jackie. Unfortunately, our time goes by so fast when you're on. We will hear more, but I got to ask you this question.
Okay.
I'm worried about you. I'm worried about your safety. And I know that the Jackie Hollander I know would be down on the street corner in the toughest area in town tonight, helping a single mother who was a victim, and getting her shelter and doing what she can to help her before Jackie Hollander would help herself. And we got to make sure that you're okay, because not only do you have a huge story to tell, you're a valuable victim's advocate. And I want you to spend this last minute with me, putting the message out there about the story that you're going to tell. It's coming. It's just a matter of time.
Well, I am going to speak. I'm going to speak until I can't speak anymore. And I can't live in fear. The truth is the truth. Buddy Dallas and I have spoke about this. We have, here we were, total enemies against each other. Now we're standing strong together. The truth is the truth. It's got to be told. It's not what the world wants to hear. I mean, the world wants to paint this thing one way, and it's not the way the world sees it. So, I mean, the world is going to have to sit back. They're going to have to let Jackie Hollander. They're going to have to let Buddy Dallas. They're going to have to let David Cannon. They're going to have to let all of us come out and say, here it is. Accept it. Accept the way it was. James Brown was not a god. He was not an icon. He was a human being. Yes, He may have put some good into this world, but he took a lot of good out of the world. And I think that's kind of a lesson we all need to learn, that nobody in this world is perfect. We have to love one another. Larry Garrison needs to see that too. He was a friend of yours. He was a friend of mine. And we're all in this world together. We're all in this universe together. We need to all get along.
Absolutely. Well said. Jackie, we'll talk soon.
Dana Pretz, to you and to my friends in Texas, good night.
Okay, take care, Jackie. Bye-bye. Bye. I'm not going to get into Larry Garrison. Larry, you know how to get a hold of me. If your email to Jackie Hollander was to try and discourage me, well, my friend, it didn't work. I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Okay, we're going to cut that PSA a little bit short and break back into the program. It's very important that my next guest be heard. He will be returning to the Orlando area along with thousands of others to help find Kaylee Anthony. And how important is that? Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, Dana. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're on your way back to Orlando coming up pretty soon. Give us some details.
Tomorrow,
in fact. What's going to be happening? I'm hearing from yourself and others and Leonard Padilla and everyone involved that this is going to be one huge search.
Yeah, I believe it's certainly going to be the largest search that we've ever done in our history and numbers I'm getting, it could be the largest search in American history for a missing person.
Well, I think this is absolutely fantastic to see the cooperation of all involved. And Texas EquiSearch, if you don't know, your goal is to find the missing. Kaylee Anthony is missing. You can interpret the evidence how you wish, but this is a recovery mission for you. Am I correct?
Yes, it's recovery. I support the Anthony's and them thinking that that Kaylee's still alive, and I think they need to hold on to that hope until otherwise something else happens. But I just as many searches I've been involved in, it doesn't look good. I just feel as though Kaylee is out there. I think that the conditions right now are really as good as they're going to get. We've had people down there working hard over the last 3 weeks. We know the water is down where it was high before. It's gotten cooler, so some vegetation is dying off. And the other thing with it being cooler now is that it's going to be just a lot better on the searchers. When we was there before, it was just hot and muggy and conditions just weren't what they needed to be to be successful in this search. So I think that, there's going to be literally thousands of people there. I just now got done loading up a trailer that we're taking over there with supplies and copy machines and, all different things. And we're actually going to be running two searches at one time, though, Dana, because we just cannot forget about Jennifer Kessie that's been missing 2 years.
Absolutely.
We're going to divide the teams up, and if we locate one of them, then we just put the rest of them on the search for the one that we haven't located. And I guess the perfect search would be to recover both of them, and that's what we're praying for.
The coordination effort must be tough, Tim. You get thousands of people, areas that you're looking for, grid maps, coordinates, equipment, you name it. In fact, right down to how to deal with the media, to whatever. How difficult is this for you?
This is going to be very difficult, but I think we've got all our leaders in place. We're going to have a lot of team leaders, of course. The command center is the thing that's just going to have to function like clockwork. I mean, when these people come out to volunteer in these searches, that's what they want to do. They want to volunteer and they want to go to work. And we just got to make sure there's not people just standing around. We just got to keep them busy, because that's how we lose people. When they come out there and we can't put them right to work, then, they don't feel as though they're valuable and they'll leave. So coordinating, the food and the water, and, we got housing. We're bringing many people in from out of state, several different states, in fact, and I feel as though we're taking the best of the best, and I'm very optimistic that we can find Kaylee and Jennifer, and you know, if I wasn't, we wouldn't be going.
You have to work on talent. You have to work on expertise, technique. But how important is faith in something like this, Tim?
Well, I mean, I think that is the most important thing. I mean, I've said this a million times. All I am is a founder of Equisearch. I truly believe that God is our leader, and I mean, He's led us to the right place many, many, many times before, and recovering many of them alive that would not have been alive. So I think there's a lot of strength in numbers too, and I think we're going to have the numbers there. One of the things they don't have to focus on now is before there was, you know, there's a lot of focus on Casey. Well, now Casey's in jail. They you know, so now the focus has to be 100% on Kaylee, and go ahead and bring in some closure to this community that's just devastated by this little girl. I mean, the emails and phone calls that we're getting, Dana, are just unbelievable. And in fact, yesterday morning, I had to turn my laptop off. I was drinking coffee, reading emails, and just all the support we got, all the wonderful words we got. I just got real teary-eyed and choked up, and it was hard to, read all them emails and all these people that just love this girl that they never met.
You know, Tim, family support is one thing, and we won't get into that because it's not what this interview is about, but I've done it. You've done it a lot more than I have, but how difficult is it when the recovery is made to come to a family, see them face-to-face, and notify them that their loved one is no longer with us? It's got to be heartbreaking for you.
I've done that many, many times, and it's one of the hardest things that you could ever do, and to go up there and hug them and say, I'm sorry, I've got some news for you, but, you know, this person is not going to be coming home alive. And but you know what? It also brings closure to these families, closure to the community, so people can start trying to get their lives put back together. And it's going to be a very difficult one. We became extremely attached to all the people in Florida, to Kaylee would never know him. It's, you know, it's been incredibly emotional, and, you know, there's a lot of different blogs and message boards and stuff out there that are 99.9% positive. There's, you know, a few negative things out there, but, you know, you can expect that anytime. So we don't listen to the negative. We stay focused on what we're going to do. And I'm certainly hoping that next week at this time, you and me are on the phone again and saying, you know what, there's two more families out there that have some type of closure.
Well, you know that we'll be here hoping and praying for what's best. Tim Miller, tell the folks how they can learn more about Texas Equisearch.
Do it now. I'm sorry, Dennis.
Tell the people how they can learn more about Texas Equisearch.
Oh, you know, just go to our website, www.txeq.org, and we certainly need all the support we can get in this one. It's going to be a very expensive search, and you know what, we need the prayers. We, you know, I think there's a lot of power in prayer, and you know, just any way that we can be supported and these two families can be supported through this, you know, terrible time. I truly believe the best that any of us can possibly hope for is one day here in the near future of going to a couple funerals and allow these two to have the dignity that they certainly deserve.
Absolutely. Tim Miller, thank you, sir. We'll be in touch.
All right. Thanks, Dana.
Bye-bye. You know, Tim Miller uses the word dignity, and I think that's probably the classiest thing about Tim Miller is his commitment and his dignity. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I told you a story about a case that I investigated where a young boy who was playing in the backyard of his home had a tragic accident where he was jumping off of a limb of a tree into a pile of snow having fun, and sadly, the zipper of his jacket got caught on that limb of the tree. Well, there's a little bit more to the story. He's standing out in the front yard of the home and seeing the parents driving down the street. It was a nice day, and they were out for a drive. And seeing the look on their faces of, you know, happiness and togetherness as a family, to a look of sheer terror, because all of a sudden, as they're coming up the street a half a block away, they see a police car, they see an ambulance, and they see a hearse in their driveway, and then having to tell them that their son had died tragically in this accident. There's no feeling like it. Anyone that has to do it, they have my respect for life. And Tim Miller is Dignity. Dignity and Tim Miller are one and the same. The organization Texas EquiSearch tries to bring dignity to families. And how dare anyone question that? Tim Miller, the people at Texas EquiSearch, you have my respect. I'm getting a little choked up here. And I wish you all the luck in finding Kaylee Anthony and finding Jennifer Kessie, because those are two families that deserve some answers and deserve some dignity. I'm going to take a break, and we'll be back in a minute with Mark Williams, WNDB news director. He's a classy guy, too, and he's going to be here with an update on the Anthony case. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. You'll know Mark Williams as the news director for WNDB Radio. He's also a regular on the Nancy Grace Show, and I thought I'd bring Mark back to the program to talk more about Kaylee and Casey Anthony. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Dana. Good to be with you again.
Nice to have you back on the show. Listen, since I've had you on last, there's been lots of, I'm not sure if it's breaking news, but lots of news in this case. And the first one is that we're hearing that the convicted killer Scott Peterson has been writing Casey Anthony letters. I'm also hearing that that's a bunch of BS. What can you tell us?
Well, I could rest to tell you right now that is a bunch of BS from the word go. And this story developed a couple of days ago. The deal is the Orlando Sentinel, which is the major newspaper owned by the Tribune Company in Orlando, ran a story in one of their editions saying that Casey had been getting these letters from Scott Peterson, the convicted felon, convicted of killing his wife and unborn son back in the San Francisco area a couple of years ago. Well, they apparently did not confirm that story whatsoever.
Wow.
Channel 9, which has the biggest ratings of all the television stations here in the Orlando area, did some digging. As soon as they saw that, they talked with the California prison system, and they said, no, we check all the letters coming in and going out. Peterson hasn't written to anybody. Then they checked with Alan Moore, who runs the jail's PR machine here in Orange County, and he said the same thing. We do the same thing. There's been no letters to Casey from Scott Peterson whatsoever. So the story is null and void. The Tribune Company and their Orlando Sentinel got a rather large black eye because the reporter who did that story did not do the basic tenets of journalism, is check the facts, and they didn't. They apparently reported it on a rumor.
Like I said last show, just the facts, like Jack Webb used to say.
Got that right.
When you talk about Channel 9, correct me if I'm wrong, is that not the TV network that Jose Baez threw out of his office, or am I wrong?
No, you hit that right in the head. That was a couple of weeks ago. Steve Barrett, one of the reporters, Jose was going to hold a news conference, and the deal was he and the other reporters were inside Jose Baez's office, and basically Jose tossed him out because he could, since they were on his property inside his building, calling it a tabloid television station. A little history on that is Channel 9 is owned by Cox Media out of Atlanta. They own a bunch of television stations, a bunch of radio stations, plus newspapers. So it's not a fly-by-night outfit. It's the problem with Jose Baez is the fact that Channel 9 asks all the tough questions.
And reports all the right stories, it sounds like. So maybe Baez needs to invite him back into his office.
that could be the case. Who knows?
Speaking of Jose Baez, and if you're just tuning in, Mark Williams is here. He's the news director of WNDB, and we're getting an update on the Kaylee/Casey Anthony case. We're hearing some, I think it's a little bit silly, although I do see the jail's perspective here, some complaints about Jose hugging his client in jail, and even complaints being made to the Florida Bar Association. I think that's a bit silly, but attorneys hugging their clients is a safety issue in jail, I believe, but this is not really a news story, or am I wrong?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Again, this story was broken by WFTV Channel 9 here in town. Now, the deal is that Jose Baez was told twice about not having close contact with Casey Anthony in jail. They meet in the classroom of the facility there, and twice he was found by guards hugging his client. There is a safety issue because they're afraid that they may, one or another, may be passing things on to each other,
exactly.
Like a weapon, a knife, whatever.
Yep.
This happened back in the 60s and 70s in California, which resulted in a lot of jail riots, and so that put a stop to a lot of things that you see now. He's been admonished for it. He said, "I always hug my clients." Meantime, there's a woman in Indiana who has no connection with the case whatsoever, contacted the Florida Bar Association after seeing the story online, saying, "I think we need Mr. Baez investigated." Again, no connection with the story. The Bar Association is going to check into this, and they could lift his license, but that's a very, very, very rare occurrence, Dana.
Yeah, I think that's a big if, but I agree with you. You start getting attorneys and clients hugging, who knows what they're passing on and off to each other, and it's more than just a friendly hug, unfortunately, sometimes. But getting back to what's friendly and what isn't, we're starting to get more reports now. On the 16th of June, Casey Anthony is in a Blockbuster video, allegedly renting a murder movie. I'm not sure about that, but this gets crazier all the time.
Yeah, there's security video out there now from a Blockbuster in the Orlando area where she rented two movies with her boyfriend at the time, Tony Lazzaro. The video shows them coming into the building and running those two movies, and then there's no Kaylee. And this is the deal.
Right.
Is the 16th is the linchpin, which is a Monday in June. This is the linchpin where authorities believe that she has killed little Kaylee. And then afterwards, she goes out and she rents a couple of the movies. One of them was called Jumper, and the other one slips my mind. But they're both, one is kind of a kidnap movie, and the other one is perfect due to the fact that somebody had placed a body, are you ready for this, in the back of an FBI agent's car.
No, oh, good grief.
Oh, yeah. They lift the trunk, and there's all these flies around this alleged body. So remember, if you recall, the dogs, the sniffer dogs, have hit on the car, Casey's car, as well as in the backyard. And remember, her mother said, "It smells like a damn dead body back here."
Yeah. Yeah, that, and, you know, whether, and I asked a psychologist this my last show, when George Anthony makes statements like, "The body in the back seat of my daughter's car wasn't my granddaughter," if that's just a, you know, a slip of the lip, or if it's something that they actually know. My last question to you, Mark, is the grandparents, George and Cindy. They've been making their round on the high profile morning shows, the Today Show, etc. There's been lots of talk about, fees being paid for pictures. There's been lots of talk about trust funds and you name it. Basically, follow the money trail. What can you tell me that the insiders are saying about George and Cindy? Do they actually know what happened, or do they still hold to the belief? And actually, we all hope that there is a miracle and that Kaylee is still alive, but the evidence certainly doesn't look that way.
They go on the pretense that the sheriff's department in Orange County has been trying to build a case against Casey. That
right.
is their job, if you recall.
Sure.
To build some sort of a case. They are under the impression that they aren't looking for a live girl. The evidence points to the fact that there was a body in the back of Casey's car. There was a body in the back of their house buried someplace. There's evidence of somebody spotting a woman with a large floppy hat, a shovel, and big sunglasses and a car matching Casey's car coming out of a wooded area near the Orlando International Airport. There are cell phone pings all over that area. And, you know, the Anthonys, at one time I had said, and I still contend this, is that Cindy Anthony has not met a television camera she didn't like. A source has told me that they drove Cindy Anthony and Casey's brother, Lee Anthony, to the airport or to a media stop in Orlando one day.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't concerned about little Kaylee as much as they were concerned about their media appearances.
Wow.
So I'm just a reporter. Figure out what you want to figure out in that.
Yeah, you can read into that what you want. Mark, news director for a radio station, you're very busy doing your media work. There's more stories than just the Anthony case. You have a big election coming up here. You're going to be covering Joe Biden, or you have covered Joe Biden, or somebody's coming there. They've all been there. Florida is a big, important state. Just how important will Florida be to Tuesday's outcome?
Well, what they call the I-4 corridor is very important. Our radio station is located in Daytona Beach, home of the Daytona International Speedway. I-4 juts off of Daytona and goes down towards Tampa. There's a lot of high-tech. It's a high-tech corridor. There's a lot of undecided voters. You find sophisticated voters. You find Joe the Plumber voters. 2 weeks ago, or a week and a half ago, Mr. McCain came into town and held his held a rally in the middle of his lumber yard. I've never done a show in the morning out of a lumber yard.
Well, there you go.
It was a great experience. On Sunday, Joe Biden is due in at what they call the Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. He'll be speaking at the basketball complex that they have. So we're getting ready to cover that.
According to today's Drudge report, that NASCAR viewers are voting for McCain 3-1 over Obama. I don't know what that means, but it's certainly exciting.
Well, I think NASCAR viewers, and I don't want to sound like I'm tilted here or slandered in any one way, they can see through what is happening on the Democratic side.
Yep.
McCain is getting a little bit of momentum going into Tuesday's election, so being basically pretty much impartial in what goes on. I know I'll be stationed in DeLand, Florida, at our courthouse, providing election results from down there, kind of catching the color for our afternoon guy, who's now going to be an evening guy that night, Mark Bernier. And, of course, you can hear our results on the World Wide Web at WNDB.AM starting at 7 o'clock Tuesday night.
Absolutely. Mark Williams, I appreciate your time, and you're always welcome on my program.
Thank you, Dana. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. That's Mark Williams, news director from WNDB, talking politics and talking Anthony. What's going to be solved first? Well, I think the fat lady will sing for Obama or McCain before we find out what happened with Kaylee Anthony, but we will probably get answers for both eventually. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. I want to thank all my guests this evening, and I want to remind you, the listener, that our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up podcasts of past shows, daily commentaries, leave comments, whatever. And what I want you all to do, whether you're listening live or listening on the podcast, is hope for the best for the group from Texas Equisearch and those volunteers that are helping in Orlando to find Kaylee Anthony and Jennifer Kessy, because remember, families deserve dignity, and the people, Jennifer and Kaylee, deserve dignity the most. They didn't get it from whoever took their lives. My name's Dana Pretzer. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.